To unpack the real issues affecting the Tasman nations, this is Trad Tasman Talk, jointly produced by theunshackled.net and rightminds.nz. Now here's Tim Wilms in Australia and Dewey DeBoer in New Zealand.
Hello and welcome to another week of Trad Tasman Talk. It is 7 p.m. here in lockdown Melbourne. I'm Tim Wilms, Editor-in-Chief of The Unshackled.
And it is 9 p.m. here in mostly free, waiting for the third wave, Auckland, New Zealand. And I am Dewey DeBoer for Right Minds NZ.
And now we delayed the show by an hour this week because from 6 p.m. Melbourne time till 7 p.m, that's when Credlin airs on Sky News Australia. Normally, that wouldn't bother us, but she, or I wouldn't say gate crash, but she was a shock addition to the daily press packet, Dan Andrews's coronavirus press briefings. She wanted to, and we'll get into this later, question him about the missing 6 minutes where between phone and text messages, somebody decided that private security would be used at Melbourne's hotel quarantine, which of course led to the deadly second wave and associated lockdown, which we are still living under here in metropolitan Melbourne. And also we delayed it because, something big might be happening in New Zealand later tonight.
That's right. I saw a tweet today from Matthew Hooton, who's a well-known National Party commentator. He's a columnist for the New Zealand Herald. And he tweeted out today claiming that Jacinda Ardern has won the Nobel Peace Prize. So if that claim is true, there is a press conference starting at 10 p.m. In Europe and Scandinavia, so 10 p.m. our time, which is 11 a.m. their time. So we may know by the time this show wraps up whether or not that rumor is true. We may discuss the Nobel Peace Prize a little bit as well, but you never know.
Arian Scott has said new conservative site just being hacked. You were telling me about something that happened today.
Yes, I've been getting messages from that all evening just before the show. Apparently some members of the some LGBT QWERTY group has managed to get into the New Conservative Instagram account, and I think through that the Facebook account. So they've been posting some queer propaganda there the last little while. I'm not involved in that, in the social media directly, so I don't really have much to go on other than it's probably being taken care of. But yeah, it is definitely a hack if you see any LGBT propaganda, because the New Conservative Party is definitely very strongly opposed to the LGBT agenda.
It's sort of reminiscent of earlier this week when George Taki, I mispronounced
Takai, it. Right?
Takai, yes.
Yeah.
So, that's now I'm probably guilty of racism for mispronouncing his name. But he thought it would be really funny on Twitter to use the hashtag Proud Boys to put up photos of gay male couples kissing and in pride parades and that, which of course the Proud Boys didn't care because their name was allowed on Twitter again.
That's a way to get unbanned. Yes, and for the New Conservative Party, assuming this all gets under control, the press you get from it is good because then everybody will know that we're the anti-LGBT party, and so hopefully that means more votes.
Now, of course, as always, we're live on the Unshackled and Right Minds YouTube channel. We're using the new broadcast software that I've rolled out on Unshackled Productions this week. So far it's gone pretty smoothly. The only sort of lapses has just been my own pressing the wrong button, which of course I used to do on the old software anyway. But of course we are live on the Entropy Enhanced software. So we're both putting those in the chats throughout the night for the Q&A later. Where you can send through a super chat or ask us a question.
And it's also much easier on this for us to follow the chats I can see from both streams. So it'll be a lot easier to keep up. And as you just saw before, it's easier for us to put comments up as well. So liking it so far.
Yep. Now, it's the final countdown in New Zealand. What is it? 8 days to go, October 17th. And all of a sudden, Auckland is back at alert level one.
That's right. The script is going according to plan. Suddenly, we're in level one just for the last week and a half, 2 weeks of the election. Every event has been cancelled. Every campaign event. Every meeting practically has been cancelled. We're seeing, polling actually hasn't really changed that much, I think, largely because, you know, who can campaign, and especially when the Prime Minister has had the 1 p.m. slot to do her own campaigning, per press conference every single day. So, we're just rolling through the last week now. Early voting started on Saturday. They expect at least half the votes to be in before Election Day. And obviously we are going to be doing our own election live stream. We'll be doing election coverage starting at 7 p.m. New Zealand time on Saturday, the 17th, and that will be, I believe, 5 p.m. Melbourne time.
Yeah, and we've also got a additional panelists joining us, one from New Zealand, one from Australia.
Excellent. I think it'll be a good show, and we'll do some promotions through it the next couple of days. I'll get Amy to make up some graphics for it so that we can, get everybody to come and watch our stream, because the mainstream media coverage will be lame anyway. So, people will want something else to watch.
You'll get your man husband prod out to get her to do it. But it's also the ACT, Australian Capital Territory election on that day as well. So there'll be two elections for us to cover. That's why we're going to have a split Trad-Tasman team. Obviously, the New Zealand results will come in first, because you actually count the pre-polls before on the day itself. So yeah, it's a pretty clear indication of where the night's going to go.
Exactly. And when the results start rolling in New Zealand elections, they roll in pretty quickly. Usually within 2 hours, you've got a very clear result. Obviously, there are special votes that get counted a couple of weeks later, and there's usually a slight shift in seats. Usually it's one seat shift to the left on the special votes from overseas, because obviously the people who don't live in New Zealand and don't have to suffer the consequences of the election tend to vote, for some of the crazier left-wing policies.
The mail-in ballots is the one.
Thanks, America. we call them special votes because they're usually very special people who send in special votes.
Well, they're called postal votes in Australia, and we've got our local government elections here in Victoria taking place, and there's been a lot of, I've noticed on Facebook, a lot of people putting out information so that voters can be as informed as possible, because given what we're going through with the lockdown here, it's more important than ever that voters are informed about the candidates and their allegiances when voting. And we don't have party disclosure in Victorian local government elections. So in previous years, you had to dig deep to make sure that you're not accidentally electing a Labor, Green or Socialist. And a lot of the Labor and Greens candidates have actually been using a Liberal Blue in their promotional material.
Yes, and in our local elections, we get a little bit of that, although often the Labor Party runs as the Labor Party in strong areas. And as I pointed out on this show, during our last local body elections, I had a wonderful choice of being able to pick between the Labour Party and the Communist Party. So,
now I should go to our situation in Victoria, because I describe it as stage 3.7, because we still have the 5 kilometre radius travel, hairdressers, golf are still closed, as are gyms and tennis courts. They also retail apart from obviously the supermarkets and pharmacies is click and collect. Pubs, cafes and restaurants are still in Melbourne takeaway only. We've got to get down to people just keep the mainstream media as the target, but it's Dan's target, which is five average daily cases over a 14-day period and five mystery cases. And I'll just go through, finally, the Chief Health Officer's media release has come out now. So I'll go to this. This is another great thing about this new software is that you can see it as well. So Victoria's recorded 11 new cases, but the overall total has increased by 10 due to one case being reclassified. That's code for there was a false positive. That's what it's code for.
We get historical adjustments sometimes where cases appear and vanish out of nowhere.
So I'll go out of here, and it's got the non-aged care outbreaks here. So there's 31 cases linked to the Chadstone Shopping Centre outbreak. This was at the Butcher Club, where the manager is. He's actually the sole ICU patient with coronavirus here in Victoria. There's also the Frankston family outbreak here, which is total 11, has six active cases. It's a cleaner from this cluster here who was the patient zero in this Chadstone Shopping Centre outbreak. And it's also this cluster which has been linked to a new outbreak in Kilmore, which is in Mitchellshire in regional Victoria, which is on an extra step from Metro Melbourne, where they're no longer under house arrest. So we've got this this one super spreader who's responsible. So our 14-day rolling average, it's 9.7 here for Melbourne and 0.4. Actually, this is today's
kind of giving the weather report.
Actually, that's actually yesterday's report. Uh-huh. So here it is here. Melbourne 9.4 and regional Victoria 0.4. But the information is pretty much they actually haven't got the proper media release yet, even though it is after, 7 p.m., so I don't know what's going on there. But basically, there's also been these, because the mystery cases are a concern. We're at 12 mystery cases over these 14-day average. But there's been...
like the unresolved mystery cases in New Zealand that we had an entire outbreak based on the spontaneous generation of a virus somewhere in New Zealand that has not yet been traced back to anywhere.
So this is the updated, they've got the infographic, but not the actual media release. Good job, Department of Victorian Health and Human Services. So 11 new cases. So these new clusters at Chadstone and Kilmore, they've bumped the testing numbers up because they were under 10,000. So past few days, they've been around about 15,000. We're under 200 active cases now in the whole of Victoria. There's been no deaths the past 2 days, 17 cases in hospital and one in ICU, which is that Butcher Club manager. And if you look nationwide, we've only got three in hospital. So there's three in ICU, one each in New South Wales, Queensland and Victoria, 31 in hospital in total, 10 in New South Wales, 4 in Queensland, 17 in Victoria, because there's been three new mystery cases in New South Wales. They happened on Wednesday, then there was eight the next day, and then there's been five today. But New South Wales is open for business. You're not under house arrest. You can go to a cafe, restaurant, or pub. You're allowed indoor or outdoor private gatherings of 20. Victoria is only slightly above with those daily cases, yet we're under house arrest. We have to wear fitted face masks now. The muzzles being tightened, no more face shields, bandanas, or scarves. So, and it's basically because Victorian DHS, they still don't have confidence in their ability to contain outbreaks, but they are they do seem to be surprising themselves that they've largely contained the Franks and Chadston and Kilmore outbreaks. I think they're just shocked that, we're actually not doing too badly this time.
There seems to be a little bit of that element of luck involved. And I'm following more closely what's happening in Europe as well around their resurgent cases. And if you look at the graphs, the cases now are higher than they were before they started their lockdowns. So they are, they went through very expensive restrictive processes and actually made no change to the overall number of cases. They're now starting to do things like introduce mask mandates where they previously didn't have them, even though health authorities are still saying, well, we don't actually know if these work. And we're getting, obviously, you're seeing mixed results from different countries. And in the end, it's the authoritarian response from an authoritarian country, which is where this originated. And there's not enough talk, obviously, about China. This is the China virus, and it is the China response. That's all that there is.
Yes, and Trump, of course, he's been the main global leader to call it the China virus. Another name is the Wuhan virus or the Wu flu or the Qing Kong virus, yeah. CCP virus.
Yeah. The response is the same, right? It is an ultimately authoritarian communist response, and we're seeing, sadly, seeing that stick everywhere. People are now talking about, going through this for the next year. It's been a year. If you had asked people a year ago, mid-October last year, you were told, would you put up with this? They would tell you no, they wouldn't. Obviously, we see it's not true. All of these questions we've always had, sort of, how does this happen? How does the authoritarianism happen? Well, now we know the answer. We've experienced the answer. And people are willing to live through this for indefinitely.
And Australia and New Zealand have completely shut off the international borders. Josh Frydenberg said there's not going to be international travel open until at least the end of 2021. Western Australia, their government this week, which bragged about a budget surplus, they're not going to open their hard border until June 2021. And we're actually going to, which is, I guess it's not too bad from our point of view, negative migration, because basically we've communicated to the rest of the world we're shut for business.
What's happened to New Zealand is we've had basically record positive migration, because everybody's coming home still. There was a huge number of New Zealanders, or people with New Zealand residency and citizenship, who lived overseas, who are all coming back in. So we actually had record numbers of people coming into the country. But if this continues, we're not opening the borders anytime soon. We will end up in a similar situation where we have low or negative migration. And I suspect if this election goes the way that I think it's going to go, and Australia unilaterally opens up its borders to New Zealand, I think you're going to start seeing a massive net outflow of New Zealanders jumping the ditch and not planning to come back.
Of course, just increasing the migration intake is the lazy path to economic growth, the immigration Ponzi scheme. You're doing it, of course, the traditional way with your, so far, three children.
That's right. I hope it's the sticks, essentially, that the immigration policies are reviewed. I don't think so. I think this is, they will go back to what they can do as quickly as possible. Our National Party is already talking about, if they win, they want to open up the borders as quickly as possible to get as many temporary workers back in, migrant workers back in, so they can prop up, the GDP numbers again. By basically just importing cheap labor from overseas. That's still their policy after all this.
We've in the past few days, it's been reported that Chinese international student applications are down, and also Chinese buying Australian property is also down as well. Obviously, the deterioration of relations between the two countries would have probably contributed to that, but there'd be a lot of Australians who'd be thinking that's not a bad thing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Do you know who we got an endorsement for our coronavirus response, Australia, from Bill Gates, of all people? This was posted on Twitter by the Deputy Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Nick Coatsworth, referred to as Dr. Nick for short. He said, "It always hasn't been pretty, it always hasn't been perfect, but it has worked." And Bill Gates appraises Australia's pandemic response.
Oh, congratulations.
Maybe thanks for that, Bill.
Bill, by 2020, I did not know that 2020 would be the year where Bill Gates would become the most hated man in the world, but he somehow has managed to do it.
Yes, certainly he's made the rounds of the online forums.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and I actually saw it posted today. This is on a gaming forum where it went a little bit off track onto politics, and somebody was upset. They were living in an Eastern European country, and they claimed that recent polling there had shown that basically a quarter of the population had been turned into anti-vaxxers who believed that Bill Gates was going to wipe out humanity. So this person was incredibly upset by this, of course, saying that the government's responses to the virus have basically supercharged the conspiracy community. So that at least is a big, the conspiracy theorists have been the big winners of 2020.
And to give a bit of background on Dr. Nick, he's obviously the most photogenic, you can't see his face there, of the government medical professionals, which is why they put him as the face of their COVID safe ad. But he's also, you'd say, the medical mandate cheerleader at the federal level, because he was hypothesizing about how you could make the potential coronavirus vaccine mandatory as possible with a whole bunch of big stick policies. And he's hit out at Craig Kelly, federal MP, and also George Christensen, federal MP, for their lobbying and support for hydroxychloroquine, mm-hmm. which Trump actually didn't take when he was at the Walter Reed Medical Facility when he was being treated there. He tried another new wonder drug.
Yes, that's right. He even made a video about Regeneron and the antibody cocktail that he got that he will be making available for free to all Americans. And I kind of knew the script for 2020 would go to the cure for coronavirus being injecting yourself with the cells of dead babies would be the way to go. It turned out that wasn't quite the case. So the Regeneron is actually made from the ovarian cells of hamsters. But they test the antibodies on an immortalized kidney cell line from an aborted baby girl in the Netherlands from 1973. So the use obviously of harvested tissue from aborted babies is back in the spotlight as well, and they use this in a lot of the antibody testing and vaccine processes. So I think it's a little bit of a downside there from Trump. But I suppose giving more exposure to this as well.
Yes, given that it's sort of it's only one aborted fetus that was 1973. That's still that obviously abortion is tragic, but it's still just one that was nearly 50 years old. But you don't want it to become a precedent.
And exactly, and if it's the discussion around this is it was done then it would be a different discussion if this was something that were completely illegal today it were seen as horrific and tragic, and that it shouldn't be ever be done again, but this is still stuff that goes on today.
In Victoria this week, there was at last a victory for People Power. I've been talking about the COVID omnibus bill that the Andrews government is trying to get through. And of course, one of the clauses in there was that they could appoint anyone to be an authorised officer to detain anyone indefinitely.
Same as New Zealand, yeah. Mm.
Well, that clause has now been scrapped this week, and so there's been it's been redrafted, the bill. That was the three crossbenchers who gave Dan Andrews the state of emergency extension, which is Samantha Ratman of the Greens, Fiona Patton of the Reason Party, and Andy Medic from the Animal Justice Party. They obviously, I think, got enough shame for passing that, so they didn't bow down to Dan's demands this time. And there's this good summary about what the redrafted bill says. This is from David Limbrick, the Liberal Democrats Victorian MP, who also voted against the state of emergency extension. As a good libertarian, he would. This is what he says. Yesterday, I updated you. We had a win with the government signaling they would amend the bill to take out some of the worst parts. So what do the amendments do? Remove the preventative detention powers from the bill. These powers allowed authorised officers to detain people either tested positive or close contacts, and the authorised officer believed they may not follow directions. Limits authorised officers to specific classes with specific powers. Previously, the bill allowed pretty much anyone to be appointed as an authorised officer. This is also good. Still problems with the bill. He's still opposing the authorised officer appointments because he doesn't want to extend emergency powers. Obviously, no libertarian would. So he's also concerned about the severity of some of the penalties and powers in the OH&S section. And he also talks about the other parts of the bill. He says people have been asking him about sections of the bill allowing children to be taken away from their families. He says that this is a incorrect misinformation. My team is engaged with people that provide services to assist in the revindication process. An example might be a parent who has a substance abuse problem, their children placed being out of home care. Current process has a comprehensive treatment program to allow that person to recover. The child can return to a safe environment. This process may have been interrupted due to the pandemic. Simply allows reunification process to be extended another 6 months. So I do not have problems with this bill. And if it was separated out, I would support. And then he says, I also had people claim that this section of the bill relating to HS&F Act would somehow exempt ministers and public servants from workplace mantle laws. My team is investigating this, and we do not believe this to be correct. I do not have concerns with parts of the bill relating to continuing remote operations of government facilities, such as parliament committees, councils, and courts. Another part of the bill allows workplace injury payments to continue. I do not have a problem with this part of the bill either. And then at the end, he basically still scolds the government for basically not engaging with the public and educating them about why the bill necessary. And Dan today is basically being like, oh, I'm not going to answer questions about why we changed it because it's a past issue now. There's no point. Mm-hmm. So just forget that I ever proposed this clause, which Gideon Rosner of the Institute of Public Affairs referred to Dan's COVID gulags.
Yes. It's at least interesting to see some slightly effective pushback, a little bit of opposition forming in Australia, whereas in New Zealand, all we really had were sort of rubber stamps. And obviously, as we discussed in the show, Parliament was suspended anyway. But before they were suspended, they passed a bill basically giving all of these powers to the cabinet in New Zealand, which seems, you know, some of these parts seem to have been removed from the Australian bill. Obviously, they were never quite used in New Zealand. Not that I've seen anyway.
Yet.
But it's all in there, right? It's on the books, and it'll eventually come back to bite you. You know that for sure.
Now, as I mentioned, New South Wales, they've had this they had 12 days without community transmission. It looked like the virus would be eliminated, or so they thought, until Wednesday. And so now the question is, will the Queensland government remember Anastasia Palaszczuk? Her Labor government is going to the polls on October 31st. She set the date for November 1. One day after the election, for the border with New South Wales to reopen. But the standard that she set is 28 days without community transmission. That's obviously been broken. So the question is, has the clock been reset? And of course, she's basically echoing Dan Stiles. She's basically toying with people's livelihoods and family reunions. Oh, not sure. Yeah, we have to wait on them to see where all this is happening. But obviously a New South Wales Premier, Gladys Berejiklian, she's said that this is not a time to be complacent, and she'll crack down on venues doing the wrong thing. And Health Minister Brad Hazzard, also known as Health Hazzard, over the Ruby Princess docking and spread, he had an unfortunate, some people would say, Freudian slip of the tongue yesterday.
The other area of danger is the place that we would normally consider to be the safest place on earth, our homes. You've already heard today that a number of the people who've actually now got the virus got it in a home situation, and we'll hear more detail about that in due course. But it is both a safe place and a dangerous place. We must treat this new world order, this new world of COVID, we must treat this new world of COVID, even in our own homes, with a high level of care and caution. Can I ask?
Yeah, so he knew as soon as he said New World Order, oh, I shouldn't have said that. And then we said New World of COVID. So
the New World Order of COVID is in your homes. Your homes are a dangerous place. The New World Order.
Forget about youth gang home invasions, COVID invasions.
Exactly, yeah. Mm.
I saw that live yesterday, and so I wasn't
surprised. I'm glad I wasn't in the middle of a swig of gin there.
Yeah, so I'm not surprised it was clipped and put around social media.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Now, as I mentioned, as I've always mentioned and alluded to before, Dan gets up every day for his daily coronavirus press briefing update. Tomorrow is going to be his 100th straight day. Ooh. And he takes questions from the Melbourne press pack there. So this is how he claims that he's being transparent and that he's disclosing information. Yes, they get to ask questions, but they don't often get answers. And probably the most prominent prober of him is the Australian newspaper's Rachel Baxendale. There was actually an article in the Guardian, of all places, last Saturday, talking about the death and rape threat she's got from the I Stand With Dan people on Twitter for asking these legitimate questions about whether it be the hotel quarantine inquiry, who made the decision to hire the private security contractors, and also what's the point in wearing a mask in regional Victoria if you're the only person outside within a kilometre. Now, there was a Facebook group that was started just on Monday.
Yeah, those questions are not conducive. They're not important. You can't ask those questions. No.
There was actually
it's not about your freedoms. It's about your lives, Tim.
There was actually a Facebook group that was started on Monday. We Stand with Rachel, which has already got 4,200 members. Dan was in a bad mood at the beginning of the week because she was there, and also because it was discovered that, well, it's not just Melbourne's trains, but also Sydney's trains are using some of the parts are being sourced from a Chinese company, which is being blacklisted by the US, which has used Uyghur Muslim slave labor. And he was also in a bad mood because people went to St Kilda Beach and other beaches around Melbourne because it was a warm weekend.
It's more dangerous to be outside, but it's also dangerous to be inside, as we just heard.
Especially during a hot day. It's being typical of Melbourne spring. It's now cold and it's now pissing down with rain.
Mm-hmm. We've actually had some wonderful weather here in New Zealand, but it has we did have a little bit of a cold front sweep in, a couple of cold days, but we're definitely enjoying the spring for the most part here up here in Auckland.
Now, Rachel, she's taken a week's leave now. So Dan thought he was in a better mood. I think it was on Tuesday. Wednesday when we just had six new cases. He was in a better mood then, but probably because Rachel wasn't there. But he probably got the fright of his life today when Peter Credlin, Sky News host of Credlin and former chief of staff to Tony Abbott when he was prime minister. She turned up in the daily press conference. And I emphasize the word she because Dan, he has been constantly belittling towards the female journalists in the press pack, not just Rachel Baxendale, but Alex White from the Herald Sun and also Gabriella Power from Sky News. So this is Peter Credlin in the press room. And then this is from the Danger Dan Andrews page, him basically thinking, oh shit, when Credlin shows up to your waffle session. And you can see this was when she asked one of the question. Her nose was poking out of her mask. So I thought to myself for a moment, is Dan going to get the police in to take her out because her mask is slipping? But when I noticed when she asked the follow-up question, she put the mask back up over her nose. But
the nose knows. Mm-hmm.
So I watched Credlin tonight where she basically went through what information she's trying to get out of the Premier. I've got it all written down here, so I'll just go through it. So there's this missing 6 minutes when on March the 27th, it's basically like the 18 missing minutes during the Watergate scandal. So this is in between 1:16 p.m. on March 27th and 1:22 p.m. on March 27th, when police Victoria Police Chief Commissioner Graham Ashton didn't know who was going to be manning the hotel quarantine, and 6 minutes later he did. So he was texting his contact in the Australian Federal Police. Ashton said, mate, question, why wouldn't AFP people guard the hotel? At 1:16 p.m., he texted the head of the Victorian Department of Premier and Cabinet, Chris Eccles, about whether police would be guarding guests. And then at 1:22 p.m., Ashton texted his AFP contact, Kershaw, saying how he now knew that private security would be used. And there was also a text message between the Premier's private office and the Department of Premier and Cabinet at 1:19 p.m. We don't know who that text message was through, but also Graham Ashton received an incoming call in that missing 6 minutes, which they can't get they can get access to his outgoing calls and texts, but not his incoming ones. There'd have to be a federal warrant to get those under the Federal Telecommunications Intercepts and Access Act 1979. And so Peter Credlin was there basically asking Dan, will you give over your phone records and your department's phone records, just lay it all out to the hotel quarantine inquiry, which he can't be compelled to do because it's a board of inquiry, not a judicial inquiry or royal commission. And he said, oh, the onus is on them to ask and we'd be happy to assist. That was his answer. Yeah, so
not really.
And Peter Credlin, she's narrowed it down to this missing 6 minutes now, and she's vowed that today is not going to be a one-off. She will return there every day if she has to get the answers there. And of course, because she was Tony Abbott's chief of staff, and also because her husband is a former Liberal Party a federal director, Brian Loughnane, who in my opinion is probably the best a political operator of his generation. He was the federal director of the Liberal Party from 2003 to 2016, won John Howard the 2004 election, gave it his best to try and win in the 2007 election. He was the one that got Tony Abbott on the brink of victory in 2010, and then of course the Abbott slide in 2013 as well, and he made brilliant campaign ads during that time. So when Tony Abbott was Prime Minister, Credlin and Loughnane, they were the dream team. She was the Chief of Staff, he was the Federal Director. So of course lefties on Twitter were saying, oh, how come she got issued a press pass? She's not a journalist, she's a Liberal hack sent there by Rupert Murdoch.
And yeah, of course the other journalists, the other or so-called journalists anyway, the ones that have been throwing the patsy questions have not actually been doing their job. And we've had a similar situation in New Zealand too. Obviously, the journalists asking, fake questions, basically, right? There's nobody who actually asks a real question. And they only let the journalists in who will ask them, the easy things, who will be like, oh, what did you have for breakfast this morning kind of questions. So I'm surprised they gave her a pass.
So was I. And, of course, a leftist Twitter should be decider of who gets a press pass.
We shouldn't joke about these things.
Yes, but that's what they believe, though.
Definitely. Oh, they definitely do. And we're coming up to 9:45, last 15 minutes of the show. Do send through your questions. We'll try and answer as many of them as we can. I think we have worked through most of the news today.
I've still got a bit to go here.
I'll give you another couple of minutes then. And send through your questions.
We haven't got questions yet. So also today, Jenny Makarkos, she put forward a new submission to the hotel quarantine inquiry, basically saying that the reason that private security was used is because the Premier circumvented the cabinet process and also the crisis council of cabinet. So basically what it said was it was basically dictator Dan who made all these decisions in no uncertain terms, and if she is responsible, then so should Martin Bakula's Department of Jobs, who's secretary signed the private security contracts. So it gave him quite a blast to say that it's basically his trashing of the cabinet style of government is why all these decisions were centralized and there wasn't a proper cabinet process. And we also had this this week I've got to get his title right, the emergency commissioner Andrew Crisp. He changed his testimony from back in June when he was before the Public Accounts and Estimate Committee to the judicial inquiry. He told the Public Accounts Committee that he did brief Police Minister Lisa Neville on 27th and 28th of March about the hotel quarantine program. He's now said, no, he didn't. He didn't brief Lisa Neville on it. And Peter Credlin asked Daniel Andrews today, how can you still have confidence in Andrew Crisp when he clearly breached Section 32 of the Emergency Management Act 2013 by failing to inform the ministers here? And Dan said he had full confidence in Andrew Crisp.
Of course, yeah.
Also, we had our federal budget this week, we got the official budget figures, which of course were very grim reading. to put it lightly. So the deficit for the 2019-20 year is 83.5 billion, and for 2021 it's projected to be 213.7 billion. Our national federal government debt is expected to peak towards 1 trillion. And JobKeeper is going to be replaced with a JobMaker youth wage subsidy. So 200 a week for those between 16 and 30, and 100 for those aged between 30 and 35. So,
yeah. And I am wondering where we're going to go in New Zealand with this as well. Obviously, our businesses are all open and so on, but a lot of the hospitality sector, people who are reliant on people moving about and visiting restaurants and so on, they're still, when they're interviewed, are saying, no, we're not getting the kind of business we were getting. It's been a terrible year. People are still not coming back. And either all of these zombie businesses are going to fall over at the end of the month when our wage subsidy is over, or the incoming government will very, very quickly, or what is most likely to be a continuing government, will have to push something along to patch up the holes. And I suspect something along the lines of what Australia is doing is something that we're going to see as well.
There was some good legislation that passed the parliament this week. The repricing of university degrees. So arts and laws degrees, they will increase, but engineering, medicine, science, nursing, they will all go down in price because, yes, arts degrees in particular, not known for being real, having real employment prospects.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I also heard that you've got some tax cuts in Australia, unless those are overhyped on the New Zealand side, but we've been told
that you've promised tax cuts. Those earning between 45,000 and 90,000, they'll get roughly extra 1,000 a week in tax back. That's being backdated to July 1st, but this is, of course, all deficit financed. It's basically Reagan deficits don't matter because you're cutting taxes, and which is, of course, goes against the Austrian economic theory and also the David Stockman theory that you've got to starve the government beast first of funds before you give the tax cuts.
Yeah, it will be quite interesting to see where this goes, and seeing more and more rhetoric from the economists to say, the deficits don't matter, the debt doesn't matter. Everything's going to be fine. Obviously, the government issues debt in its own fiat currency, which it backs by itself. So the theory is that it can just keep it can keep going as long as it doesn't Zimbabwe itself out of existence.
We also had today the valedictory speech of Finance Minister Matthias Cormann. He's been probably the most stable and competent person in the Abbott, a Turnbull and Morrison governments. He's been finance minister all throughout the time. He's also been the Senate Senate leader for the government, negotiating bills with the crossbench. His nickname is the Negotiator because he was born in the German speaking area of Belgium, so still has a thick German accent, and he's often joked about the fact that he sounds like Arnold Schwarzenegger. So in his valedictory speech today, he said, "After today, I won't be back." So his plans, hopefully, his post a Senate a career job will be as Secretary General of the OECD. He made his pitch yesterday by in three languages: English, French, and German. And he's likely to get the support of the Labour opposition as well. So fingers crossed, he can get it, because yes, he's definitely being a stable, calming influence. And even Penny Wong, the Labour Senate leader, said some nice things about him and said, you know, even though we've been at opposite sides, we've had mutual respect for each other, which you don't hear much these days.
No, that's right. A welcome change, which may become a worrying change. You never know how things are going to go, but it sounds positive. I've got I saw a question from well earlier on the show asking why I'm not on Twitter, which may be a good question to answer, because Twitter is a sewer and I'm not really that interested in doing Twitter. But I am thinking of maybe sending some automated posts out to Twitter every now and then in the
future.
That's
what we do with the Unshackled posts. I sometimes reply to some center-right people I know who are on Twitter who, yeah, like, you know, who fight the upstream battle there. Yeah. Though the
I stand with you there, but it's not my thing.
Yeah, the I Stand with Dan Twitter cult. They're starting to quite crumble with the I Stand with hashtag beginning to be used more ironically than in support. Yeah, yeah. And there's a lot of suspicion growing that a lot of the I Stand with Dan accounts are bots, probably in Labour offices.
It could be Russians.
Well, who knows? The most prominent is the PR guy, which is a picture of Rory McClure.
In this case, they're probably CCP accounts as well. So,
yeah. There's quite a hunt on to unmask the PR guy, who is this this person underneath the Troy McClure Simpsons character Twitter picture.
Good luck. I've got another question here from Kieran. This time, thoughts on this article, and well, don't need to post the article, but it's asking if New Conservative will defy the polls. The article itself, because I've seen the article, it's rubbish. Obvious. I mean, it's Marxist propaganda, obviously. But I do hope the question that's being asked is will be answered in the affirmative, in that while the polls are still showing New Conservative floating, you know, near the 2%. We're going to see a much better result on election day, but we will see. I think in the end, while there's a lot of campaigning against New Conservative coming from National and ACT, they're actually not going to get across the line without us. So if New Conservative doesn't make it, they're not going to make it either. So, you know, everybody should hope that we make it, but it does seem likely at this point we're going to be seeing an interesting Labour-Greens government. And they're already promising all kinds of wonderful things. The latest one here is that they have promised to ban gay conversion therapy, although they struggle to define exactly what it is.
They're basically what they imply by that is those like pray away the gay camps in like the 2000s with all that traumatic. Treatment there. That's the stereotype, which of course that's not what it is in its.
And there's a question of whatever they're trying to ban actually exists, or whether they can define it. Obviously, the question is: are they basically going to ban churches? Are they gonna obviously. Conversion is not therapy, and that's, I think, an issue with some of the psychiatrists who try to apply theology and apply experience to psychotherapy. That's not something that I think is helpful. But again, they should be free to do that. People should be free to go there. But in the end, conversion is not a form of therapy, and that's where the left is completely wrong. And this is where I think, in a large part, there. You know, that's what they're really targeting is religion, obviously.
Well, Dan, he is planning to ban it, but since he's had to shut down the parliament to avoid scrutiny, he hasn't passed it yet. Neither has he passed Fiona Patten's Racial and Religious Tolerance Amendment Act, expanding our hate speech laws, which Jacinta has also promised to.
That's right. We talked about this last week that they've guaranteed some hate speech laws as well. Although it sounds generic at the moment, we'll have to see the law, of course. But they may make sort of religious incitement a crime, which means that if we can, if people say things about Christianity, we need to start some riots and get them put in jail. So we'll see how we go with that. But it could be useful.
Though Queensland, they have outlawed gay conversion therapy, though it could, the law is so broad that it could even cover health professionals who have a child presenting with gender confusion if they talk that
and,
child
and that's
out.
Also, that's and that's where they obviously spread that, you know, the real conversion that's happening is that the queer agenda is doing the converting, and obviously they want to chemically castrate children, they want to be performing surgery on children, they want to destroy their lives and make more people miserable like them. That's their goal, and their ability to stop people from telling the truth and from these children being able to get proper help to say you shouldn't be mutilating your body, you're going to be fine. That's obviously what they're really hoping to ban, because is what they're claiming to be going after is so vague. When we eventually see the bill, we're going to see that's what we're going to see. You can guarantee it.
I had as my guest on Wednesday's Wilmsfront, Marika Rantsi, political posting mama, whose main activism has been on the issues you just mentioned, particularly our Marxist Safe Schools LGBT education program here in Victoria. She's now writing articles on The Good Source, and she talked about... when she was younger, she went through a tomboy phase, which a lot of girls do, and they outgrow it. And she said, thank God I didn't grow up today, because they'd probably try to transition me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, exactly. The thing is, like as you said, most of these people are incredibly miserable. They suffer from depression, self-harm, incredibly high suicide rates, and they're trying to set more people down this path, and it's incredibly sad. It's something that we absolutely should vocally oppose. They will forge ahead of it, ahead with it, and they will come after you if you speak up.
Well, the main reason I had Marika on my show Wednesday is because she is the new vice president of the March for the Babies, which it happens every year on the Saturday in October closest to the passing of the Abortion Law Reform Act 2008, which Daniel Andrews was the health minister at the time. You've got that law now in New Zealand. It legalizes abortion up until birth. But obviously with the COVID restrictions, it's going to be an online protest this year. So she's going to speak.
One that we've had in New Zealand is it's called the Little Pink Casket, and it's actually a social media account, and it's a man who's basically carrying a casket to Parliament, and he's been doing that walk as well over the past few weeks and months, doing a similar, in a certain way, a similar sort of virtual event where people are following him.
I'll just get the link up to the... so you can join the online protest tomorrow. It's at 1 PM Melbourne time. Their slogan this year is BLM, Baby Lives Matter. Protest at www.mftb.online. We also discussed the irony of Dan saying that he's got to trample on human rights during the pandemic because it's about human life, yet he's the health minister who helped legalize abortion in Victoria, and also the premier who legalized euthanasia.
Everything, everything is a lie. Everything they push is a lie. Everything is an inversion of the truth and the opposite of anything good. But sadly, not enough people see through it. And that's our job is to tell people the truth and to help them see the light.
Yep, definitely. Well, it's just ticked past the hour. We haven't got an announcement yet. I haven't got a news alert on my phone.
No, not yet. We may call it quits. I'm seeing... we are waiting for the Nobel Peace Prize announcement, although I'm not sure if we will wait. But there is supposed to be a press conference that's starting right now in Scandinavia. But we may not wait it out.
Yeah, fingers crossed she doesn't win it, because when she does get reelected next week, it's going to be like a halo around her.
It would be perfect. It would perfectly fit into the script the last week of the campaigning, last week of voting. She's got the Nobel Peace Prize wall-to-wall coverage. And then the second term of Jacinda Ardern is ushered in with this Peace Prize. And apparently, if she has been nominated for it, if she does get it, it will be for her response to COVID-19. It will be for the ultimate lockdown eradication strategy that all the other world leaders will have to emulate.
It's just broken now. The Nobel Peace Prize for 2020 goes to the UN World Food Program for its effort in fighting world hunger. So the UN won the Nobel Peace Prize.
From itself, almost.
Because the Nobel Prize is Norwegian. It's a separate.
Independent. But it's pointed out basically the internationalists patting themselves on the back. I'm surprised they went for the globalists. I'm surprised they went for a group. I was reading some analysis where people were saying, it's not likely they would give it to a group, or especially one involved with the recent pandemic. But I suppose going for something safe.
It sort of reminds me about how our TV Week Logies Hall of Fame, they used to induct individuals, but now they induct TV shows such as Play School and Neighbours and Four Corners. They started inducting TV shows as a collective instead of individuals. So now the Nobel Peace Prize is being
collectivized. Yeah.
I noticed with Judith Collins that her National Party MPs are already backgrounding journalists to basically pin the pending defeat on her, to basically say, yeah, it's going to be all her fault. We're going to ditch her after the election, and it's going to be all fresh, a new term in opposition.
Sorry, could you repeat that one more time?
They're already making Judith Collins the sole fall person for their loss.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Of course, is that's going to be the case, because she pushed to be the leader, and they went through several, or at least tried to oust Simon Bridges. They picked somebody terrible. She came in here, you know, she was supposed to be the one to pick up the pieces and take the National Party to new heights. But instead, she's still polling lower than, say, Simon Bridges was. So it means that the same factions that have been continuously chopping off the heads of the National Party leaders likely will continue. And it has also never really been the case that somebody who's taken over after a big loss, has won the next time, right? This one-term governments obviously are incredibly rare in New Zealand. So it's basically what I referred to over the past few years as the poison chalice. And I was quite surprised that she would take the poison chalice, as I see it. Obviously she is a slick political operator. She may survive a loss if she's able to explain that, well, it wasn't really her fault. It was events that led to it. But it'll be interesting to see if the knives come out and who they come out from.
Well, as I said, she's in her 60s, so her political clock biological clock is ticking.
Yeah, yeah. We do, obviously, it's not quite like America, but we do have some older politicians. And I'm not necessarily sure that age is actually the biggest factor for New Zealand at the moment, but who knows? I'm seeing the chats already wanting Simon Bridges to come back. So, you know, I criticize Simon Bridges heavily, and, you know, but maybe I think he may stage a comeback. You never know.
Well, Judith Collins, she took over with how many weeks to go? I mean, it was almost impossible.
It was something like 6 weeks before the election. Basically, campaigning had begun the week before she took over. But then the election was extended out by a month. So,
yeah. But if Nationals were doomed to lose, then I don't know about you, but I'd much rather she put up the best fight possible than go down all go.
And that's what she has done, obviously. But I've stated, in fact, wrote in an article today that to me it doesn't matter who, if it's Jacinda or Judith as the prime minister. I mean, they're both extremely liberal progressives, and
I'm a hardcore Christian conservative.
So to me, I don't care. I don't care much for her. But obviously, she does have a lot of support on the kind of secular right in New Zealand. It's weird that at the same time the ACT Party, which has been as we said, is sort of the more libertarian side, even though she herself basically shares those progressive values. It's interesting to still see the National Party is bleeding votes off that way, even being more liberal, to sort of still bleeding votes to an even more liberal party. I mean, liberal in the progressive American sense, not the Australian sense.
Best way to describe her, she is free market economics, social liberalism, and tough law and order, as indicated by her nickname, Judith Crusher Collins.
So we shall see. And obviously, in New Zealand, the minor parties have been at least they've attempted to push aside, especially the New Conservative Party, because the agenda is obviously to push the parties that are in reality the most similar to each other and that are not going to upset the established order of things. It's hard to be too positive about the election. Obviously, we're going to have the live stream next Saturday evening, and we're going to wrap up this show now and come back then. We'll analyze the last week. We'll analyze the results as they come in, and we'll talk a little bit about, you know, the different parties and policies and everything that's gone on.
Because even it's we're skipping the Friday show regardless, given that we're doing the stream the next day. But you have that blackout, which starts, doesn't it start the night before that?
At midnight. It starts at midnight. Yeah.
Yeah.
So on the day itself, you can basically not talk about politics.
You have this basically because we're starting at 5 p.m. Melbourne time, which is when the polls close in 7 p.m. New Zealand time. Because that's when you're allowed to start talking about politics.
Basically, yes. I'm seeing here a question. How long is the stream? It's going to be probably 2 hours, as we said. It usually is about
until we get a result. Both in New Zealand and also ACT as well. And
We may go on for, who cares, 3 or 4 hours. As long as it's entertaining, as long as we don't run out of drinks, we'll keep going until the results are solidly in.
Yeah, and we'll try and cross to the speeches on the night as well.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for watching. It seemed to flow well. The new software with the graphics, everyone can hear, everyone can see, which is good. See you next week on Election Day.
See you all next week, Saturday, 7 p.m. Tune in here and not with the mainstream media. We'll give you all the coverage you need.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's edition of Trad Tasman Talk. To keep up with the latest real news and analysis from the Tasman Nations, visit theunshackled.net and rightminds.nz.